A quick note before we begin, the interview with Jack Rady occurred before all of the new allegations emerged.
Reports that say that something hasn't happened are always interesting to me because, as we know, there are known knowns. There are things we know. We also know there are known unknowns. That is to say, we know there are some things we do not know. But there are also unknown unknowns. The ones we don't know, we don't know. We don't know. Unknown unknowns.
Will he?
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 Will he? It's the question on everybody's mind. Will David Copperfield make the moon vanish? I am your host. Thank you for joining us. And if you haven't listened to episode one, please do that first. February, the month originally planned for the vanish, is well behind us. The moon did not disappear, but David Copperfield finally broke his silence. He tweeted,
I'll still be making it disappear.
Some cool new developments are taking extra time.
But I'll have more updates soon. Thanks for your patience.
You're welcome, David. The cool new developments are that yesterday, 16 women came forward as part of a five-year-long investigation by journalists at The Guardian into sexual assault allegations against David Copperfield. We'll get more into that in a little bit. And so the countdown continues, but there's something else I should make you aware of. There's something maybe I should have said in episode one. This is not the first time David Copperfield has announced a moon vanish allusion. The first time was decades ago. It's been mostly scrubbed from the internet, something Copperfield is known to do. But if you look hard enough, if you scour magician message boards long enough, you'll find it. And so, listeners, this countdown may never end. This podcast may never end. Like Mr. Copperfield trapped in the prison of his own nightly performance, we too find ourselves stuck in the epistemological purgatory between Mr. Copperfield's announcement of the moon vanish and Mr. Copperfield's lack of making the moon vanish.
Will he? Will he?
In today's episode, we're going to loosen our white-knuckled grip on reality and embrace the chaos and horror of uncertainty and the strange and beautiful ways our mind fills in the blanks, finds patterns, writes stories, creates worlds. We're going to ask some difficult questions and consider some interesting perspectives. We're also going to talk to world-famous ass magician Jack Grady, so stick with us.
Weirdest thing was on the news, like the straight-up news, they had David Copperfield on, and they were talking to him about how he was going to create this great illusion to make the moon disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's in February, he's supposed to do this illusion to make the moon disappear. And he was talking about, well, we've been practicing. So if you see anything weird in the sky, if you see any weird lights in the sky, that's just us practicing. And you should report it, like tag me in David Copperfield. And I'm like, holy shit, there's going to actually be like real spiritual warfare going on.
Right.
And they just want the normies to think, oh, yeah, like that's just David Copperfield. I heard about that.
Episode 2, Chapter 1, Blackout. In yesterday's Guardian expose, 16 women describe encounters with David Copperfield that range from groping to drugging and raping. Some of the allegations are not new and were even mentioned in episode 1, but most are new, and if true, reveal a clear pattern of predation against young women, some who were minors. I'm going to read a paragraph from a profile written by Bill Zem of David Copperfield. It's from a 1994 issue of Esquire magazine. The allegations that are coming up now are from this period of Copperfield's life. The majority of the allegations are in the 90s and early 2000s. And I think this paragraph that I'm about to read is so economical in how it captures the sexual mores of the time and David's truly remarkable embodiment of it. Again, I'm reading from a 1994 Esquire magazine. Divino, boy magician, was born of sex. David Kotkin became Divino only to impress girls, for girls were his obsession. Before becoming Divino, he had been invisible to girls, a common curse among nascent, great men. Quote, "I would always fall in love with the girl in the next seat, who would then ignore me and be in love with somebody else," he told me. "But I knew that somehow, someday, I would capture her attention." He knew he had to do something, so he did magic, which was all he could do. In this way, he learned to dominate girls and make them like it. Magic, he realized, taught him sex before sex was an option. Quote, "Men enjoy seeing a woman controlled, say, with levitation," he later explained. Quote, "Women, on the other hand, see magic as an act of trust, especially if she's going to let a guy do horrible things like stick swords through her body," end quote. Thus, his life would be spent wreaking out sweet revenge, having his way with women by skewering, floating, vanishing, and resurrecting them. And afterward, there would always be applause. I'm not interested in whether or not magician David Copperfield is innocent or guilty of a crime. I'm making a podcast about the moon vanish. But when I read the news about him drugging and raping women, I wondered about what kind of person does that to another person. And then I was reminded how David Copperfield got his first show in Vegas.
I couldn't get into Vegas. They wouldn't let me in. Tom Jones, Cher, all these people that were performing. I wanted to be their opening act. They wouldn't let me do it, you know. And
why? Because you weren't a
singer? I don't know why. I was on TV already. I was always at specials, but for some reason, there was like three hotels. Now there's 200 theaters here. There's like three or four hotels you could perform at, and I couldn't get in. And then finally, Bill Cosby let me in. Bill Cosby allowed me to be his opening act. And at the Hilton, and I got my foot in the door. Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby.
Interesting. Again, today we're talking about uncertainty, and being roofied, in my experience, is quintessentially a known unknown. You know you will not know.
I was wondering if you remembered that time you roofied me?
Yes.
And I was curious if you could tell me what it felt like to roofie someone.
I decided to call my friend. Her voice has been pitched down for privacy reasons.
I think that's a misleading question. Because I told you it might be a roofie.
Tell me the story. What happened? What happened the night you roofied me?
So the night I roofied you was... I'm not saying the night I roofied you. I didn't roofie you. That is a totally, totally inaccurate depiction, distorted view of reality. What happened was that we roofied ourselves.
Explain to me what happened. Because in my memory, you roofied me, but you did also roofie yourself.
So, do you remember if it was 2004 or 2003? It was 2003 or 2004. I was 16 or 17. I think I was 16. And I was working as an artist assistant in New York and sort of crashing on your couch at the time, just being like a total vagabond piece of shit. And I was on like an errand for this artist I was working for. But while I was on the errand, I mean, my whole, like, life at that time was, like, just, like, focused on, like, getting high and trying to, and I had no money, but I really, really wanted to, like, smoke weed as much as possible, as often as possible. So I was on this errand in, like, Times Square, and I passed by this fancy hotel where there was this guy smoking a cigarette.
She bums a cigarette from this much older stranger, and they start talking about her favorite topic, weed. Naturally, he invites her, a 16-year-old girl, up to his hotel room to smoke.
We got up to his hotel room, and it was huge. I mean, it's the biggest hotel room certainly I've ever seen in New York. It was like, you know, it was a huge presidential suite in Times Square. So then he rolled a blunt, and we got really, really high, and there was all these windows, and we were like looking at the clouds, and it was a really fun time just getting super glazed. You know, you make a lot of weird friends when you love drugs. We were like laughing and talking about stuff, and he was like, "Do you know who Fabulous is?" And I was like, "The rapper?" And he was like, "Yeah." And he was like, "I'm Fabulous's manager." And I was like, "Oh, cool. If you want to stop by later, like, we're going to have, like, a big party here. Fabulous is going to be here with, like, his crew." He handed me this pill. He's like, "Do you like ecstasy?" And I was like, "I don't really do ecstasy." And he's like, "Well, this stuff's really good. It's called Green Gucci Ecstasy." And he handed me this pill. And it had like a little Gucci symbol on it. And he said that I should take the pill before I go to the party.
He wanted her to take the pill before coming and partying, but she didn't.
I put the pill in my pocket and then I left. And I was like, "Wow, I can't believe I survived that adventure." And he didn't pull any moves on me or anything. I got back to your apartment in Sunset Park, where I was staying at the time, told you the story of this guy, and we were laughing about it, about how much of an idiot I was to do this. And then I was like, he gave me this pill. He said it's Green Gucci Ecstasy. You were like, "It's probably a roofie." And I was like, "Yeah, I think it's very likely it's a roofie, but I don't know." I think we were both just contemplating, like, should we do it? And we were like, "Well, if we do it, we should do it, you know, at the apartment together." So we split it in half that night, and we were watching, like, Public Access, New York Public Access, and then we just, like, fell asleep.
She assumes that we fell asleep, but I'm not so certain. I have slivers of memory from that evening, like hazily making a panini with my George Foreman grill. But the truth will always be, I don't really know. And I'm just glad I didn't accidentally burn the place down. We both lost hours of our lives to a mysterious pill that was meant to be taken at a party with the rapper Fabulous. I'm glad we were there together. I'm glad there were no older men around. And the only known that I know is that it's treacherous to be a teenage girl.
Yeah, well, David Copperfield, Jack Grady, okay? I'm coming for you, not a threat in a metaphorical sense. It's not even your real name. You changed it because your original name sucked. I'm Jack Grady. I've been that since birth, all right? You're the top dog of this industry? Not for long, baby. Jack Grady's coming for you. Your moon vanish is going to suck. You're complicit in the Epstein case, and I'm done with you. Fuck you, David.
Are you ready?
Chapter two, big feelings. It's interesting to note that not a single magician I spoke to would agree to be on this podcast. No one would agree to be on the record, except Jack Grady, who admitted to me he was feeling a little foggy, and this is why.
I need to keep it vague because I'm in an NDA. But basically, I choked on a piece of the food on air, like on while the cameras were rolling. I choked on a piece of food, blacked out, and completely passed out. And my mouth locked shut so they couldn't get it open to like Heimlich me. And I was out for about 3 minutes and my heart stopped for, I think it was like 30 seconds to a minute. And they had to perform CPR on me to like bring me back to life. And that happened 6 days ago.
And 6 months before that, he nearly died of sepsis, also as a result of one of his performances, magic boxing.
For the event, I broke my nose, right? Like pre-boxing match. Mm. And from me breaking my nose right here on this nostril, it would like swell up and these big blood blisters would form. So like a crazy person, I didn't want to go to the doctor, so I would slice them open with a razor blade. And I got sepsis, right? Also, after the boxing match, I kind of went off the rails a little bit because I had long time, like, struggled with addiction to multiple substances and, like, having, like, a ton of money hit my bank account and nothing to do now really, like, led to a bad combo. So about, like, I think it was 2 months after the boxing match, I had to check into rehab.
Mm. Did you do magic at the rehab?
I did, yeah, but I didn't tell anybody I was a magician because, like, when you tell somebody you're a magician, they kind of really, like, go, like, ham, like, oh, do a trick. So I would make, like, a biscuit bounce, you know? If you ever seen that trick before where you toss the biscuit on the floor and it bounces up?
I haven't seen that one.
I did that trick. I was doing, like, coin tricks here and there, but I didn't tell anybody I was a magician. They were just, like, they probably thought I was, like, demon-possessed.
Right.
Because when somebody's doing a magic trick and you don't know there's a magic trick going on, it's like extra, there's a little extra sauce on that, you know?
Jack Grady is living on the edge, a pretty hardcore dude, but even he had some concerns about coming on the podcast.
Two is allegedly, in my opinion, David Copperfield is sending out agents that have been sitting outside my house. I don't know if you just heard that car door close, but there's a magician currently outside of my house. He flew all the way from Vegas. And I'm very scared, okay? I have an 80-pound pit bull, and he's cowering in the corner. He doesn't know what to do with himself. The whole family is horrified. And allegedly, in my opinion, do not sue me, David Copperfield, because he knows I'm talking to you right now, is literally on the verge of murdering me and my family. Allegedly, though. Allegedly. That is completely an allegation that I'm just guessing because I just heard a car door close outside my house. And it sounded kind of magician-y. There was a little bit of flamboyance on the way the door was shut. So.
Jack Grady is famous on the internet for many things, but mostly ass magic, which he also performed on America's Got Talent, and magic boxing, which nearly killed him. He is a very popular magician with over 1 million followers on TikTok alone and a unique performing style. So how did you develop ass magic, and when, and what was the creative process like? And
basically, it kind of started with when I first like got on the TikTok. I had an account, Jack Grady Magic, right? Because if you notice, it's Jack Grady Magician V2. It's actually my third account. I was posting like geek magic, if you're familiar, like a lot of sideshow stuff, a lot of just stuff of that nature, you know, pulling corn kernels out of my eyes, all that fun stuff.
I'm not familiar with that.
And yeah, it's It's something else, but I got quickly banned doing it, you know? And I kind of stumbled on ass magic when I was trying to find my voice, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So when I'm kind of producing one of my videos or structuring a routine, I kind of want it to just feel like pure chaos, you know? It's like something you're not supposed to see. You're scrolling the television at 3 a.m. and insanity pops up.
This is the mystical fold of Eldoray. Nothing on either side. Yet when I reach in, we have 30 parking tickets unpaid that have resulted in a warrant for my arrest.
Jack Grady has ushered in a new unhinged form of prestidigitation for the digital age, but he got his start, like many magicians, performing for children.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I used to be like a full-time kid's birthday magician. I could never do that job again. You know, that was the worst job I had ever had.
Did it make you a better magician?
I think it did make me a better performer. Like, I just watched the movie Poor Things, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a, are you familiar with the movie? It just came out.
Yeah, I haven't watched it, but I know about it.
Yeah, so there's a scene where Emma Stone is in like the in a brothel, right? She just became a prostitute. And the lady says to her, like, you need to break every ounce of your being down to be reborn. That's and obviously she's talking about prostitution. I'm talking about doing magic at kids' birthday parties. But I feel the same way. Like, it broke me down to my core.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many times doing that where I was just absolutely, unequivocally, unadulteratedly defeated.
Yeah.
No hope left. And yeah, no, it definitely was formative, I'd say.
Because the kids can't follow, or they don't care, or because they're making fun of you, or they're destroying your shit.
They're just, I don't know, like, a lot of those shows would go good, but, like, there's just sometimes where it's, like, they're just a lot of bad kids, you know, especially at a party, you know, a lot of kids don't even want to see a magic show. And also, I just don't like doing magic for kids because, like, I think it's weird that the art form kind of gets relegated to children sometime. It's like, oh, you're a magician? Oh, my kids would love, like, you, you know? It's like, I don't want anything to do with your kids, ma'am. I'm sorry.
Not all magicians feel the way Jack Grady does about performing for minors. Here's a clip from an interview with Jane Doe 15, one of Epstein's trafficking victims. It's from Julia Fox's Forbidden Fruit podcast.
So my first meeting with Epstein was I had people kind of like escorting me and they took me to a David Copperfield show, but I didn't actually go to the show. I just was taken in backstage of the David Copperfield where the show is and taken to the backstage area. And David Copperfield kind of came out in his like magician, you know, vibe and showed me a bunch of tricks. I was able to like take a bunch of photos with all the like tricks. There's like a picture, there's some Polaroid I have somewhere of me like float, like David Copperfield holding me and I'm floating. Wow. And then in comes Epstein. He's like, hey, you like magic, you know? I'm like, I'm 15, live in the woods. I like to read a lot of Narnia books. Yeah, this works for me. And then we go immediately go from the David Copperfield show, are escorted in private cars. There's, by that point, I think like five girls. I was definitely the youngest, but I want to say everyone else was a teenager to early, early 20s.
And they were all blonde. And Eastern European looking like you.
Ho, 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 it's magic.
The question we're all here for, will he?
Will he make the moon vanish? Probably not, no. Probably not. I think, I don't even think the event's going to happen. I think David's got too much heat on him. I'd like to see it happen, but at the end of the day, I think it's going to be a little mid. I don't think it's going to look that good, if I'm being honest. It's going to look a little dumb. And yeah, I've thought a lot about how he's going to pull it off. I don't really know yet. I'd need to see it afterwards. But if it looks good, I'll be glad to be proven wrong. But I think it's going to be stupid as hell the way it's going to look. Allegedly, I don't know, I don't want to get sued, I'll tell you that, but like, he's pretty complicit in the whole thing, and he most likely knew what was going on and didn't do much, you know, which is a pretty bad thing. Like, if that's the level of his involvement, that's nasty. And the audacity to do the Save the Children charity when you know, like, you used to be homies with that guy. Like, come on, dude.
Well, do you think it was an attempted cover? Like, he was like, oh, I'll do this Save the Children thing as, like, a... to, like, clean up his bad reputation?
You know, that's honestly... the whole David Copperfield picking the Save the Children thing is kind of like... it's just such conspiracy fire. I'm anti-conspiracy theory. I don't believe in any of, like, that QAnon shit. But, like, I get why you have people who do when you have people like David Copperfield picking the Save the Children charity. It feels like it might be some weird attempt at PR. But at the same time, I don't know.
Chapter three.
Trust issues. Hello, my TikTok nizzles. So I had an epiphany about this whole David Copperfield moon thing as I've been researching, and you guys have been so amazing with giving me advice and tagging astrology people and all of us trying to figure out this big puzzle. What if it's time for the moon to go away? And David Copperfield is going to do the illusion and make the moon disappear, and then it just never comes back. Just never comes back.
The best magic undermines our sense of reality. But what if you already don't trust
that the world is round or that outer space exists? What would you think of the moon vanish illusion if you don't think there is a moon? That it's a projection? Or that the moon is real, but for convoluted reasons having to do with reptilians, it has to go? And that Copperfield is an integral part of that cosmic battle.
The moon was brought here. There is a moment in time right now that is ending. We can see it. It's happening right now, you guys. This is so exciting.
I'll still be making it disappear. Some cool new developments are taking extra time.
What if the moon is leaving? Because if you understand the reptilians and all that, which are a thing, you guys, it's a thing. But they don't want to be here anymore. And I'm not even sure that they don't want to be here anymore. I'm pretty sure that they're not going to be allowed to be here anymore. Because the story is that we come from Nibiru, which is the Anunnaki.
I'm tired. I'm done with this episode. Bye.
Poof, there go the car. Poof, there go the crib. Poof, 100 mil. Woo! David Copperfield. Huh. David Copperfield.
Copperfield.
David Copperfield. Poof, there go the car. Poof, there go the crib. Poof, 100 mil.